a newcomer app portion of the program. Hopefully you've seen this box sitting there in the back of the room. And what we do is we put this back there along with a stack of 3x5 cards and some pens. And we encourage you to write down any questions that you might have about the program, of Alcoholics Anonymous. Put the questions in the slot. And then we bring the box up here, select the question at random, and with our panel of experts attempt to answer that. Not funny. We had a question submitted last week from Dolores, and she is here. She actually did one of our readings, and we left the question unanswered last week because we had to do a little bit of homework. The question is, how does self-centeredness differ, in your opinion, from male to female alcoholics? Now, the reason we waited a week is we had to get an opinion from a man and a woman to answer this question properly, which we have done, and we invite up here now to answer the female side of the question, Ruth.
My name is Ruth, and I am an alcoholic. From page 62 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. You know, I don't think selfishness and self-centeredness is necessarily unique to alcoholics, although many of us want to think we're unique. I think it's a human condition. I think it's present in male and female. And I don't really, in my opinion, don't feel there's really a difference. I think it's important to remember, though, that taking care of ourselves, we were given the gift of life from God, and it's up to us to take care of ourselves first, and then take care of those around us. But if we don't have balance, if we don't achieve balance in that, then we are self-willed run riot. And I thought of something else, but now I can't think of it. But, you know, I really think that it's the same for all of us, and you know, maybe some of us show it in different ways, but I think it's the same for males and females. Thank you for letting me be a service.
Thank you, Ruth. And now for the men's viewpoint, Vince. My name's Vince, and I'm an alcoholic.
Some of the biggest problem I struggled with as a man, and bringing, you know, the whole time from a kid all the way up to being a man, is I struggled with two things. One was alcohol and how much I drank, and the other is relationship with women. Today, I don't drink. So, after 8.5 years of sobriety, what I work on, and I try and keep at the forefront, is selfishness and self-centeredness. And the way I understand that it gets out of hand is that sometimes when I'm speaking to somebody, and they're trying to get whatever they've got inside of their head or whatever they're talking to me about, that I don't take what they're saying and try and manipulate it and use it to my advantage. Because, see, that's what I used to do. And in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it suggested that we work our program in all of our affairs. So when I'm actually communicating with somebody, female or male, I have to make sure that I'm not trying to be selfishly taking advantage of that and working it to what my desires are. When I actually have an open mind, body, and spirit, which I've learned here in the program, then things go much easier when I don't try to take control. So to release myself of selfishness and self-centeredness, I always remember that it's a gift and a pleasure to be of service and to have an open ear without expectations of what that person is saying or what I'm supposed to do with it. Thanks. My name is Vince. Still my apologies.
Thank you, Vincent, Ruth, and Dolores for the question. And now it is time for our featured speaker of the evening. This event is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undefeated king of speaker meetings. And this event is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. And so now, Let's get ready for recovery. Our speaker has been a sober member of the fellowship for 6 years. She has been continually in service as a secretary, treasurer, H&I representative, and sponsor. In her words, the big book has saved her life. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, would you welcome, please, from Fresno, California, Tricia S.
Gosh, I hope I can live up to that. I'm Tricia, I'm an alcoholic. Okay, so just so you all know, this is my first time speaking, okay? And I'm so nervous. Well, I was. And finally, I let it go. I didn't, like, plan my speech or any of that because it never turns out how I wanted to anyhow. And then I'm just pissed off. But, that's when I co-chair or it's my birthday or, you know, like, I think I should be cured and have some good shit to say. But, so I didn't plan anything, you know, and I just gave it all to God. You know, I was just like, you know, you just pick my words and let them get the message. So if you don't get the message, it's God's fault. So I guess I'll just start from the beginning. You know, as a kid, you know, both of my parents were addicts and alcoholics, and I did not want to be like them. And I'm lazy, so I'm lean, so that's okay if I don't roll off. You know, I moved into my grandparents' house when I was in third grade, and I kind of got a glimpse of what a real family was, you know, and I still felt like an outsider because I wasn't my grandparents' actual child, you know. I was just kind of there sharing a room. And my friends at school had, you know, what appeared to be the perfect little family, the brother, the sister, you know, the little soccer mom with the cute haircut and cute figure, you know. And I envied that so much. You know, I wanted that perfect family so bad. And so I made it like my goal in life to create that of my own, to have that family, you know. And that was my only goal in life, period. You know, I was an alcoholic from the gate. You know, this disease was in my life from the beginning. You know, I would steal packs of cigarettes from my grandma, and I'd go out and smoke them as fast as I could to get that head change, you know, in third grade, you know. And it just progressed. You know, my mom got me back, and high school, my disease just progressed more and more. You know, we left for lunch, and my friends went back to school, and I didn't. Because, don't you know, there was more left, guys. You know, like, where are you going? And it became apparent to me that I had the disease that my parents had at that time. And I was okay with that, you know. I wasn't even close to thinking about quitting, you know, but it did become apparent to me at that time. Somehow I graduated high school. I don't even know. You know, I had a codependent mom who felt bad that she had missed out on some time, and she did my homework. You know, I had codependent friends who, you know, felt bad for me and did my homework, you know, and that's how I graduated high school, you know, because I'm not there, you know. So I graduated high school, and my disease progressed more and more. You know, my mom took me to this fellowship called the ODAD Club, or just the ODAD, I'm trying to remember. But it was hilarious. I was like 13, you know, and I went stoned with my friend, you know, and she's like, I'm taking you guys to a meeting, you know. So we go to this meeting, and it's just this seedy little place, you know, and I'm loving it, you know, it's like crazy, and they do the readings, and this one lady is doing the reading, and there's this crazy old man sitting at this table who's just groundy, you know, and he's reading it, and he's, like, mumbling under his breath. He knows every word by heart, you know. And she says a word, and you can tell she's nervous about reading it in the first place. And every time she, like, messes up, he, like, corrects her all angrily. So I was laughing at that, you know. And then they called on me, and I had no clue what to say, you know. I don't remember what I said. All I remember is at the end I said, I'll keep coming back if my mom makes me. And she did. You know, I didn't hear a word that was said in there. All I remember was making fun of the older man and my share at the time, you know. I carried on with my disease, and it progressed more and more, you know. I entered a relationship towards the end of high school, and I stayed in it afterwards. And I had this little job, you know, where it was called the yard boy job at this construction place, right? And my job was to load all the concrete trucks with the materials that they needed, you know. And I had learned a good work ethic while living at my grandparents'. My grandpa was a workaholic. You know, I was pushing a wheelbarrow at the age of 10, you know, and I knew how to work. And, but this disease got in the way of that. You know, I knew what kind of worker I was supposed to be. And I wasn't able to fill those shoes whatsoever. You know, I would come in late. I'd be dragging ass. You know, this disease just didn't beat me up, you know. I would leave as early as possible, you know. I would cut corners just to get it done so I could leave, you know, and go get a head change, you know. And so I was in this shitty relationship that was completely unhealthy, you know. But every time I'd go to end it, it just seemed like it was the best thing I had going for me, you know. Because at that time, I had done zero self-esteem building acts my entire childhood, other than working outside with my grandfather. You know, I accomplished zero on my own, because don't you know my grandma felt sorry for me. When my mom got me back, she was trying to make up for shit and felt sorry for me. So I had all these codependents around me that did everything for me. You know, if I didn't write a paper and it was due the next day, my aunt would type it up for me, you know, and it was done. And so I did zero self-esteem building acts, you know. And so this relationship was like, you know, how I'm going to get my life goal. You know, I'm going to have that family. And yeah, he's fucked up or whatever, so am I. And but I'm going to make it work, don't you know, you know. And you know, so I stayed in that for a while, and I thought, you know, if we just move. You know, if we just move and start over, everything will be great like it's supposed to be, you know. And so we did. We moved to Arizona, you know, and I took me with me, of course, you know, and everything was not great. And I carried on even worse in my disease there eventually, you know. And because I didn't have any friends around me, you know, it was worse. My disease just progressed even further. And I came back to Fresno, I went back to Fresno, and I got arrested. And I remember thinking when it was time for me to roll out that, shit, man, I just don't want to keep this up. You know, I didn't want to stop drinking or whatever I was doing, but I didn't want to live that lifestyle anymore. And I just didn't know what to do, you know. And an older lady asked me, are you going to keep it up? And I told her, probably, you know. And I did. Well, the last time I got arrested, I say the last time, like I've been arrested 1,000 times. I'm not trying to be tough. I've been arrested twice. The second time I was arrested, I was in jail for like 4.5 months, which was an eternity to me, you know. So I read, you know, and don't you know I found Jesus, you know, because that's what we do when we go to jail. And my father would come and visit me, and he had told me about his God, you know, and that how he had given this disease to his God, and he took away all the cravings, and that when he prayed to God, that he didn't even let him DT. And at that time, I could not grasp that whatsoever. Like, I was like, well, what did you do? Like, what magical voodoo spell did you do to make this happen? You know, like, I don't understand the magic words that you said. And I had read a passage in the Bible that had me convinced that this was the way I needed to go, you know. And when they called me to roll out, it took me like 30 minutes to leave. I did not want to go. I was scared. I did not want to live that life anymore. I was more comfortable in jail, you know. I made it fun, you know. We had togo parties and, you know, like, I made it fun. And because I was a kid. I didn't have kids out there, you know what I mean? I was just a kid, you know. And so I got down on my knees and I prayed that if God just would relieve the cravings from me, that I'll do the rest, you know. I'll finally do it. You know, I know where to go. You know, my dad had been clean for 3 years at that time and, you know, had brought me to that fellowship before. And I knew where to go, and I was going to go. So I prayed, and then I got issued a court card, and I went. You know, to another, it was like a knockoff of the ODAD fellowship. And, it was another completely seedy fellowship where I fit in perfectly. And it was funny because, everybody there, like five people there knew me since I was a kid. And I didn't remember them or anything, but, because my dad had gone there, I figured, when they shared their experience, first of all, I was terrified it was a cult. And then they would share their experience. And mind you, at this time, I had no idea. I had no, you know, love and tolerance and understanding of the places that this disease can take us. I had no understanding of the fact that the only difference from my bottom and your bottom is time and how desperate we get, you know, and I do now, but at that time they would share this like horrible shit that they'd done, you know, and it's like we get another language once we're in here, you know, we get an understanding of each other, and this woman had shared this four-step stuff, you know, and everybody was just like, yeah, and I'm like, that is not okay, you know, like, why is everybody nodding, like, wow, you know, and I just had no idea, the places that this disease can take us, you know, and I'm grateful, for that fellowship, because it showed me what's out there, you know, and it kept me in here, you know, they would also share, and you know how you share, like, in a jokingly way, the shitty stuff we did, you know, the embarrassing stuff that we did, you know, and the pitiful stuff that we did, and we laugh about it, you know, we say, like, oh, I did this, and then we'll chuckle afterwards, you know. Well, people were sharing their experience, and they were laughing it off, and I had thought that my dad had came there and shared what I had been doing, and that they were, like, cross-talking about me, and I was pissed off. I was like, they're laughing about me. Like, my dad told them, and they're fucking making a joke of me. Like, it was, you know, it just shows me how self-centered I was, you know, still am, but completely was at the time, you know. It was amazing how I internalized that, you know. But I hung around because it was a hell of a lot better than what I was doing, you know. And people there hugged me and accepted me, said they loved me, and that was nice for a change, you know. It's a cruel world out there, and everybody's out for their own. And I'm not sure if I completely believed you, but just the hope that people could be sincere and like that was enough for me. And mind you, I got this court card, you know, and I'm like doing such a shitty job at keeping it together. You know, I'd go up to the sign list and I'd rip a little piece off the side and throw it in the basket. And that was my court card. It was like all these little tiny signatures on a ripped piece of paper, you know. And so obviously I didn't have it together. And but there was this guy, you know, there's always that guy. And this guy had it together in my mind, you know. This guy treated everybody lovingly. This guy went out of the rooms, didn't talk shit about you. You know, this guy took people home and hung out with them for hours at coffee when all he had in common with them was this disease. And that attracted me. It was assets that I respected and that I hadn't seen in a man in so long. You know, so I fell in lust with him. And don't you know, I needed to have him. And I got him. And so I'm still doing this court card thing, and I decide he's the one. He's going to fulfill that goal that I had my whole life. He'd be a great dad, you know. So I'm like, don't you know we should have a baby? And 4 months clean, you know. And he says yes. He's like, okay, let's do it. So I'm pregnant now, and I'm going to meetings, and I have a sponsor, and I'm working my steps, and I go to court one day, and I'm like, whoopsie, I don't have all my court signatures, but don't you know I'm doing great, you know? Like, in my mind, just because I'm on the right track, like, everything else that happened was dissolved, you know? And it so was not, you know? Like, the judge was not amused. he told me if I didn't get 5 people... that said I was in a meeting every day like I said I was, to come back by 1 o'clock, I was getting arrested. And I was going to serve my full sentence, you know. And I was pregnant now. And the ball game was completely different than what it was before, you know. And I thought, shit, I'm going to jail. And I was pregnant, and I actually was having dreams and craving those sandwiches. Yes, sandwiches that we get. And so I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to make the best of it. I'm going to get 2 mattresses. I'm going to get extra food. I'll be all right, you know? And my husband was pissed, you know? So he makes 5 phone calls. And every single person that he called, he only made 5. And all 5 people came down there. And that was what did it for me. That's what convinced me that this is where I need to be forever. Because when I was out there, you know, one time I went to go leave this house, and I'm like, fuck this, I'm not going to do this shit anymore. You know, I don't have to deal with these fucking people. And I went to go leave this house, and I took the phone, and I couldn't think of 1 damn number to call that would be willing to come and get me. Not 1, you know, and he only made 5 phone calls, and all 5 people came and stood up and vouched for me, you know, and that was amazing to me. Like, I cannot express to you what that meant to me. And so I stayed, and I committed to this fellowship and you know, to this program, and I wanted to be that person that you could call and who would be there for you, you know. I wanted that so bad. Because I knew what a good person was, you know what I mean? Like, we all know how we're supposed to be. Like, it's just in us, you know. And I was so far from that. I was not a friend, you know. I could not be a friend. I was about to be a mom. And I was pretty sure I could do that. But but I knew there was a lot of work to be done. And I was about to be a wife, and I was pretty scared shitless about that. Because, don't you know, I've only ran from relationships, you know. I would start fights so that way I could go drink, you know, much less, like, sit there and work through something. I've never done that. You know, I've never had an argument and had a peaceful outcome, like a solution. Like, I didn't know how that would work, ever. And I have a beautiful, healthy relationship with my husband, you know. And sometimes it takes a while, but we get to a solution, you know. And we try to be respectful and loving towards one another. And that's just amazing to me, you know. My mom's been married 5 times, you know, and my grandma was just a completely submissive wife, and that's how their shit worked, you know. And so to me, it's amazing that both of us could get to this point, you know. I'm sorry, I just got over a cold, so I have a cough. And so I'm doing this step work thing, right? And I get to the 6th step, and I go to my sponsor, and I'm like, okay, I'm done with my 6th step, and don't you know I only have like 10 character defects, you know? And she politely goes, okay, honey, well, that's nice. Why don't you just try again, you know? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I didn't, like, really fuck a whole lot of people over out there, you know? Like, I'm pretty nice, you know? And so I had to go home, and I had to figure out what the hell a dictionary was, and look up each individual character defect. For me, because I had, you know, the word selfishness, I have an opinion attached to that. And I picture a person, and I'm not that fucking person, you know what I mean? But when looking it up in the dictionary and seeing the definition and making it impersonal and in bias, you know, I was that person, and I was so many others, you know? And I'm so grateful that she told me to go back and do that. So I move on to my 7th step, and you know, when I got here, you know, I was in the Bible, and I had found Jesus in jail, you know, and for whatever reason, I'm just so grateful that this is a non-religious program, because my God changed, and I freaked out for so long, because I had lost my best friend, as far as I was concerned. The only thing that was going to forever be there in my life had changed in my eyes, you know. And I just didn't know how God worked anymore. And I thought, for some reason, I thought I did, you know, which was probably the first problem. But one night I had meditated, and I had felt at peace, you know. And it took many nights. But I felt peace, and I felt God. And I was okay again. And then I had realized that my God hadn't changed at all, that just my perspective of God changed. And that was so powerful for me that I got my God back, because I don't want to live this life without a God, you know. And today my God doesn't have a name. You know, I don't know how God works. I just know God does, because when I pray, I get results, because when shit hits the fan, it always works out. Like, it just does. You know what I mean? And my life is just truly blessed today. You know, I have a daughter now, and a son. And my daughter started school, you know. And this, like, change is just terrifying for me, you know, because I'm a major procrastinator, like, just major. And so I have to wake up and get my daughter to school every day by 8:30, like, no matter fucking what, you know? Like no matter fucking what, like, you know? And it's like, there were so many sayings in this program that I didn't know what the fuck they meant. And it so applies to our life, you know? Like, don't drink no matter fucking what. And get your kid to school no matter fucking what. And, you know, like, it just goes on and on and on. And it's just amazing to me how, I don't know how normal people do it without this program. You know? Like, when I get freaked out, like, I always find the solution in the program. You know what I mean? And I just could not imagine not having it. Because it's just crazy. Like, I have to do it no matter fucking what. And I do. And I have. And I've done it successfully for the whole, like, you know, couple weeks he's been going. But wish me luck. But how long do I have? 7 minutes. So like, seriously, I went back through my step work lately because I switched sponsors and I had to do, you know, I had to look back through my steps and add things to them and stuff. And it really bothered me because I got like a couple of the same character defects that are exactly the fucking same. And it affects me the exact fucking same way. Like, I'm sober. And I'm still completely fucking off my life due to procrastination and fear. You know, I'm too scared to go to school for 6 years. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to have 6 years, and I'm still too scared to go to school. You know, and I guess in this program, you know, we come here sick and fucking tired of the disease kicking our ass, you know. And that's what helps us get to the point to do something about it, you know. And I think I'm reaching that point, you know. Like, I'm tired of feeling sorry for myself. You know, like, eventually, you know, my daughter and my son are going to grow up, you know. And, you know, we'll get hobbies and we'll be married for 50 years and want nothing to do with each other anymore, probably. And then fucking what? You know, like, I'm left with me. And if I don't do something with myself, then I'm going to drink. You know what I mean? Like, that's the bottom line. If I don't build myself up, I'm knocking myself down, you know, and it was a pretty big realization to me lately that, you know, I might be doing my steps, I might be doing this and that, but I'm still so harming myself by not growing, you know. It's not just about hanging out and drinking coffee and not drinking, you know. Like, you grow in this program or you go, you know, and I might be okay now, but I can see my future if I don't grow, you know. And I'm just so grateful for this program because I would have never even considered going to school if I didn't have this program. If I didn't see people's life completely change in this program, I would have never thought that mine could. You know, and now I know that mine could if I'm willing to do the work, you know. And so thank you all for listening to my thing.